And welcome back, everybody. Thank you for joining us here in the second Members' Hours. We are talking with David Eberhard about security issues, child rearing, and much more amiss in the Swedish society and in the extension of the Western world in general when it comes to issues of psychology, application of responsibility, and adulthood and everything else. And let's try to get a little bit closer here to the child rearing aspect here. I mean, there are certainly extremes in our society. I mean, although Sweden is a country known for that partially untranslatable word lagom, right? Adequate, or however you want to term that. Despite that, Sweden is really an extreme country. It had extremes in its liberal attitudes. We've gone into complete unknown territory and applied things that really haven't been studied in the long term without really knowing the full repercussions of it, but we do so with an opinion that it's the best thing to do just because we feel that that's the best thing to do. But, you know, people tend to think that if you don't have a child rearing that is, you know, basically with velvet gloves where you've padded each corner and where the playpen is very restricted, that you somehow are kind of for or acceptance of physical abuse of children, which is, of course, ridiculous. But let's talk about that a little bit of how important it is to a child with boundaries and discipline and kind of getting away from that situation you talked about earlier of instead of trying to be your child's best friend, of actually trying to be their parents. What is the stance on that today? And tell us more about boundaries and discipline and why this is important.
I think you have to, first of all, it's the way we bring up our kids is very hard to say what is correct or not, because it's, to be frank, totally impossible to measure. So when it comes to discussing upbringing, it will inevitably always be ideology you are talking about, and I think that's the first thing to discuss here is because in Sweden and Scandinavian countries, the question is sort of like, we are doing it right. And yep. The first thing you have to ask is, how do you know that? Because obviously people have not been raising kids like we do in Sweden nowadays. People have never been raising kids like that ever in the history of mankind before.
Yeah.
So how do we know that we are doing it better than our prior generations? And the answer to that is, we don't. We have no idea whatsoever. And happily, the second thing we need to know when it comes to upbringing is that, fortunately, it doesn't seem to matter so much what we do in many ways. Because when you do measure stuff that we can measure, and that is sort of traits, different traits that our kids have and our parents have, and you can measure traits, personality things, IQ, how people are, whether people are social or not, these things. Or psychiatric disorders, for that matter, you can measure that, and you can compare parents with their kids, and then try to get a reasonable theory about why are kids becoming like they are, and what you do, the way you do that is basically two things. You do twin studies where you compare monozygote twins with siblings as two egg twins.
Yep.
Where the monozygotes twins, they are identical genetically, but the two egg twins are what's the English word for two egg twins?
Good question. Let me see.
I know the word, but you understand what I'm saying.
Sure.
These twins that are not identical twins. They are obviously not genetically more alike than any siblings. So if you compare those, with each other, you find that identical twins, they are in fact not identical. So everything is not the genes, but they are about 50%. When it comes to different traits, they are sort of 50% alike. So to make this quite quick version of it, you can say, well, about 50% of what you become is due to genetics, and that is very stable. In many ways, in most things you measure, it's about 50%. So the other 50%, then, what is that? And that's the interesting part, is because we always talk about how we become in terms of either it is genetics or it's in environmental factors. And when we talk about environmental factors, we always talk about psychosocial factors. Like upbringing, like how were your parents treating you, etc. But the interesting thing is when you take identical twins that are brought up in different homes, you then find that identical twins that are brought up together, they are 50% alike, like I just said. But identical twins that are brought up in different households, in different homes, they are also 50% alike. And the conclusion you can draw from that is that around 50%, I would say, maybe 40% or something like that. But the conclusion you can draw from that is that the differences, the environmental factor when it comes to these identical twins that are differs from each other are not due to psychological psychosocial factors or upbringing. They are due to other environmental factors like coincidence or cosmic radiation or mutations or whatever. A lot of environmental factors that are not upbringing. So the interesting part here is to really think, is this a matter of, because what we say in Sweden is the way we bring up our children always has to do with that if we are not very nice to them in all on circumstances, they will be traumatized for life. But if you look at the evidence, nothing says they will.
Right.
But what we do see is that you can obviously, even if you don't change the traits of the kid, you can always give them wrong expectations of life. And that is what you do if you... That's what my book, How Children Took Power, is very much about. That is what you tend to do if you give them they think from the age of five that nothing's going to happen to them and they are the center of the world. And then I find out when they're 15-year-olds, they are not the center of the world. So that's why we see that Sweden has the happy... We had an interesting survey a couple of years ago that showed that Sweden had the happiest 11-year-olds. The 11-year-old kids in Sweden, they were the second happiest in this OECD report. The happiest were the Finns, and the Swedish 11-year-olds were second after them. But then what's the catch? Well, the catch is that when you then measured how did our 15-year-olds feel. And they were among the most unhappy in this survey.
Exactly.
So, and this is exactly what I'm saying. This is not about the kids. The traits will not differ in whether you have a liberal approach to them, whether you have a disciplinary approach or whatever you do. The traits of the kids will not differ very much. What happens is that if you have this extremely liberal version, you will get... give your children expectations on life that they cannot fulfill.
Yeah, everyone is a winner, right? No one loses. You can't really, you know, you're nothing in the world is allowed to harm you or hurt you or speak to you in a bad way, right? It creates a very, very, such a fragile individual that this is doing a tremendous disservice at the end of it, where they don't develop a thick skin enough so that they can actually deal with some things. I mean, it should be considered by some of the studies that have been done now that this is actually in the long term, something that's working towards their detriment. It's actually something that is harming the children at the end of the day here. That's the point, right?
That's my solution. That's my conclusion. Sorry. That's my conclusion. Yes, this is harming the kids. Not that it is harming when it comes to the different traits, but expectations. I'm talking about expectations. And the expectations of life are too high and do not so and then you cannot you are not prepared for whatever can happen.
You know, the established view today is, of course, I would say so anyway, what from what I've heard in the media and kind of more popular culture is, specifically in Sweden too, that the environment is basically everything, right? It doesn't matter what background, in whatever capacity, we're all the same. We're this kind of blank sheet that we basically can impose whatever we impose upon. But as you referenced here, the monozygotic twins and the dizygotic twin studies dizygotic twins are very important, because the monozygotic twins coming from the same egg that have been raised in different foster homes, there have been observed some extraordinary similarities between them, where down to these very small, weird kind of habits in terms of their food preferences. I heard from someone who, like, they flushed the toilet, for example, before they actually went to the toilet, and like weird stuff like that. I mean, it's like, this is beyond coincidence. It means that there is a inherent genetic, if you will, imposition that exists in the world, and we have to take that into account, right?
Yeah, and that is, of course, we are biological creatures. we do inherit things that we do not have, we are not in control over. But on the other hand, the environment even is there to a major extent, but it is not primarily the psychosocial environment. It's primarily other things. There's this fantastic book by Steven Pinker, Blank Slate.
Yes, that's right.
Which is about this Harvard psychology professor. Fantastic book, which I've quoted a lot in some of my books. It's brilliant.
Very good. He's, of course, very politically incorrect, because he recognizes the biological differences and stuff like that. But as you said before, just to kind of reemphasize that point, this is something that really has been under attack lately in Sweden. I mean, I literally saw a conversation here between, I think it was Gudrun Schyman, the leader of the Feminist Initiative Party in Sweden, a fairly new party, and I believe it was the Swedish Democrats on the opposite side there. But she was talking basically about full on ridiculing him, because he recognized the very fundamental aspect that there are biological differences between the genders. And it feels like this has gone on steroids now, where the established view in Sweden, the political correct narrative, is that, you know, again, we've turned our back on biology in every capacity, which is going to be very detrimental to us.
Yeah, I think this is really a major problem. Me and a friend, we have for now, I think, 2 or 3 years been trying to make a TV series in Sweden, which is about these issues. In Norway, they had a TV series called Brainwash, which was a huge success.
You're right, exactly. I'm glad you brought that up. I actually saw one of the episodes there recently on race, for example, and the recognition of race differences, which was very interesting, and they did it in a really good way of bringing attention to this. But you know, this is frowned upon.
They've done a lot of different issues, especially when it comes to gender differences and things like that. Which was this had a huge impact in Norway on even the academics on how the different institutions got funding.
Because really.
You don't get funding to genus like this gender science after this show in the same extent that you did before, just because he showed in this show, this Harald Øya, he showed so clear that this was only politics. It has nothing to do with science, this so-called gender science that we have in Sweden and Norway.
Exactly. Well, anthropology, biology, it's all been really not only politicized, it's always been politically weaponized to a certain extent, and it's being used, against people now. But I mean, considering the TV show, that's both kind of sad and encouraging at the same time. That the sad aspect is, of course, that people are so malleable that I have to see it on TV and they bound to authority what other people say before they can even start thinking about it. But nonetheless, it's encouraging that at least in Norway that they could bring this, you know, attention to the forefront and actually get some discussions going about that. How is the reality concerning that kind of possibility in Sweden, do you think? Is it ever going to come, or are we going to just go deeper and deeper into this spiral of self-denial? Or
we haven't given up, but the people who have tried discussing these kind of matters are very bullied, I would say, from some major opinion makers. We had a Swedish. He took part in a lot of debates a couple of years ago, but he got tired of it when it came to discussing equality and gender differences, and he just said, "I'm fed up with this," and he doesn't want to do it anymore because he was so bullied from opinion makers and ridiculed.
Yeah, Per, what was his name again?
Per Ström,
that's right, exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. He was actually, his life was threatened. These extreme violent lefty groups were actually going after him, and for the sake of his family, he had to stop questioning this stuff, you know?
Yeah, and he did not say any special, he was speaking quite normal. What he did was that he changed the perspective from the male point of view, which sometimes was quite funny, I would say. Other times it was more ridiculous, but still the way they treated him was not okay, I would say.
Well, exactly. I mean, he was super mellow. He wasn't not at all offensive or anything like that. It's such an overreaction here, which shows also not only what a sensitive issue it is, but how incredibly fragile this ideology and philosophy is. Because if you begin to pick at it a little bit, it kind of crumbles and falls apart really quick. But you know, there's another example. We have, I think, a woman right now, a young woman called Tanja Bergqvist, who's actually been doing some pretty good stuff.
Yeah, I quote her in my latest book, How Children Took Power.
Okay, great. Excellent. Yeah, exactly, because she actually did a shorter documentary on RT, Russia Today, or I guess they're just called RT now, but she walked around and actually interviewed some of the people who are behind some of these, what do they call it, the gender power structure ideology, or whatever they call it. And it was, I mean, I can't, I, in all sincerity and not to put it in a bad way or anything, but I literally can't, it's like, I'm not living on the same planet as some of these people. They're so detached from reality. I can't even begin. I wouldn't even know how to begin to approach some of these people, you know?
Yeah, I understand what you say. I recognize the feeling.
Oh boy. But I mean, where is this going to lead to, do you think? I mean, they developed a genderless pronoun not too long ago, so it's not him or her, it's hen now in Sweden, where they have to, I mean, these are, and it seems to me as well that it's always, there's only two ways they can do it, and it's really either do it as it is or completely reverse the roles. So, for example, we saw these politically correct toy magazines or product magazines that came out of Sweden, where they basically, as long as the boy played, you know, with the pink, you know, Barbie house, and the girl was running around with the blue gun, then oh great, now it's gender, you know, free, devoid of gender kind of politics, right?
Yeah. What can I say? I could be mean here.
You should.
This is radio.
Oh, it's fine. It's fine. Our audience is—they're thick-skinned. They can take it. No, but tell us what you think about it. To be honest, because I mean, we have to face it. This is meddling with our children's lives. This is not a light issue. I mean, it literally is creating such psychological damage and might do so much damage at the end of it that we have to start recognizing what we're doing and how this is going to affect people.
What I'm saying is that we have been suffering from this not only now, but this was, I would say that in order to change people's ideas, which you of course can do without changing their traits, you need to have a brainwash that is going on for quite a while, And I would say that I come from a generation that was brainwashed, but we were brainwashed in a more light way. It was sort of the brainwash that everything evil came from the United States and the Eastern Germany and Soviet Union. We had TV shows from those countries, and the socialistic democratic way. Sort of we heard this from. We were five years old and watched television, but what has happened is that today we have a situation where 82% of the journalists in Swedish state television are either voting for the Green Party, which is not a liberal party, which it used to be, but a socialist party, I would say today, at least the version that we have today, and not only a socialist party, but also a party that is, as a professor that I know very well has characterized it, it's a party that is solidly created on stable, solid, pseudo scientific ground.
Yes, exactly.
So a lot of you know people with electrical allergy and stuff like this, a lot of very very non-scientific approaches to environmental issues, etc. But 82% are either environmental party or the former Communist Party or the Social Democrats. That's 82% of the journalists.
Yeah.
And of course, this is a state brainwash of our kids. And the interesting part that when a professor in journalism, Kent Asp, did this survey, and he was just telling this is how the journalists answer to these questions, and still he was the one that had the people. The journalists were sort of, oh, this does not matter. Why are we doing this kind of surveys? He was the one that was questioned.
Yeah.
It was really amazing.
Wow. Yeah, of course he's the problem because he's bringing attention to the problem.
But it's no problem that 82% of the journalists have the same political views.
No, of course not. I mean, it's cultural Marxism. They as long as it's their view, then that's fine, you know. So again, they hold true to not only political diversity, but other levels of diversity as well. It's such hypocrisy and double standards in the way that the state mechanism has enforced. And of course, then you have the issue of the public service with how they fund the propaganda outlet with by force basically and taking people's money to fund this apparatus that ultimately is about brainwashing people. But I mean, to be honest, this extends into, education as well, and the very aspect that homeschooling was banned, for example, in Sweden. I mean, that's quite telling of how incredibly totalitarian they are now in Sweden. Wouldn't you agree?
Yeah, you should not go outside the box.
Never.
Everybody should learn the same things in the same way. At the same time, but the conclusion is that nobody learns anything because they are schooling is not of highest. The kids today they don't want to be good in school because school is not cool.
Exactly, it's anti-intellectualism and everything else that's a fad right now, But but again, as you said before, though, does it matter at the end? Because ultimately, if everyone, makes the same and if everyone ultimately, I guess, think the same and look the same and everything else, what does it matter, right? It isn't really necessary, maybe beyond the aspect of just personal satisfaction. But I would guess if you're not rewarded for what you do, you wouldn't have personal satisfaction. But nonetheless, if that is not part of the equation, and if the young people
it's
know this.
It's brave new world, but only the Epsilon clones.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you mentioned, of course, educating people and getting the dialogue going and everything else, but are people, do you think, willing to accept it or has the the conditioning and the way that the state have kind of taken over the role of raising children now and telling us what to do and how to think? Is that so deeply ingrained in us that it's going to be difficult for us to find a way out of this? Or is there hope? Is there rebellion against this kind of thing that you're seeing on the rise right now in Sweden?
I am an optimistic person, so I think that there is hope, and I think most strange ideologies tend to disappear after a while. So I am optimistic, but still it has been like this, and I don't think we've seen the point of this yet. It may get worse before it gets better, I would say.
Can you tell us a little bit about what you see down the line here? Do you think that depression, anxiety, and these things you talked about is going to be on the rise? And what kind of adult, you know, human beings are we creating here, do you think?
We are creating human beings that are totally self-centered, but on the same way. You see self-centered people in every country. But what you see here is the combination of a self-centered young person who does not think that he or she are entitled to do any has to do anything, but the state is always supposed to support them in some ways. So that's the pessimistic view of a young person that is not very interested in you can see this very clearly. I think they made a study a couple of years ago where they showed people born in the 1930s how much sick leave they took compared to those born in the 1950s and those born in the 1970s.
Wow.
And with extreme differences, I would say. The ones in the 30s, they never took sick leave. And the ones born in the 1970s, quite often, if you compare the 1970s with the 1990s, if you're born in the 1990s, the 1970s would be, the difference would be like the one between 1930s and 1970s. But now with the 1970s, much less sick leaves. Sick leave. So what we have done is sort of we've created a generation which is extremely individualistic in the way that they should always be the center of the world. And if you don't show in TV shows, you're nothing. And we have the TV show Idol, like American Idol and Sweden Idol, where people think they can sing, which is obvious for everybody that nobody has ever told them that they absolutely cannot sing, which is sort of may be great television, but it's quite sad.
It is sad, exactly, yeah.
To see people that have no idea whatsoever that they're tone deaf. But we have this not only when it comes to music, of course. We have it in every aspect of life, because nobody has told them that you cannot do this.
We can do anything we want, right? Anything.
Yeah, that's what they tell us.
Yeah,
it's like me. I can play football like Zlatan Ibrahimovic.
Right. Exactly. Of course you can.
They just never saw it.
Yeah, that's right. And that's why you deserve to have, be on the same team as him and play with him, right?
Same salary.
Yep, exactly. Well, it's a self-obsession, as you say, and then at the same time, it's a complete kind of adherence to the collective around the people as well. Yeah, it's very strange,
you know? That's the combination.
Yeah.
That's the lethal combination, because, of course, you have self-centered people everywhere, like I said. But the combination of self-centered but victims, self-centered victims that someone else are always being, someone else has to take care of them all the time.
Do you think that the entitlement society is partially to blame for some of this? That, I mean, in some cases that we know now, and this is true in other countries as well, but, you know, people end up just staying at home, you know, with government social security and allowances, it doesn't make that much difference for some people economically than if they would be out there and working, you know?
Yeah, the interesting thing is what has happened the last 8 years in Sweden is that we had a total political consensus 2005 that we had a raise of sick leave due to psychiatric reasons had risen 200% in less than 10 years. So there were a huge political consensus that this is a major problem in society. We need to do something about this. So what have the right-wing government done for the last 8 years?
So-called right-wing, I would say, but...
Yeah, so-called, but still more right-wing than the alternative. What have they done? Well, they have actually lowered this sick leave for the last 8 years in a quite substantial way. And what happens when you do that? Well, since people find this their civil right to be sick without being sick, what happens is that they have no chance of being reelected. And still they made a huge job, I would say, getting people into work and getting people and also getting Sweden quite okay in international comparison when it comes to economy, etc. But what happens is that people the voters do not thank them.
No, of course not.
It's really, really strange. And it's not strange, but it's typical, because what is happening is, like, if you're a boss on in a working place and you take away free coffee for the workers, that's not very popular. And this is what the sick leave, where you had a lot of money being sick without really being sick, which, by the way, out of psychiatric scientific evidence, is the worst you can be. You should go to work and live as normal as possible. When you have a psychiatric problem, if it's not like schizophrenia or very severe problems, you should always try to continue working, not go on sick leave. But this is sort of the sick leave became the free coffee.
Right. Exactly. Yeah.
Which of course then changes everybody's views on what you can expect of society.
Yeah, it's pretty incredible. I mean, this is something that obviously doesn't work in the long run of being, being a burden really on everyone else and not taking that responsibility of taking care of yourself. Because again, it's like people, if they don't care anymore, if they just don't give a shit, what is there then? You know, why try harder, right? It's just, there's nothing there.
Yeah, but then you have like if people think, or the other problem is you have a society which has gone quite okay. We have a state; it's gone quite okay for quite a long time, and then you start thinking that everything every resource is in infinitive. What do you say? It's it will never end. So it's like the feministic initiative, like you talked about, with that people voted for them in the European Parliament. It's really strange, because if you look at what their suggestions cost, nobody read about what it would cost to do everything they say you should do. And by the way, stupid suggestions, but still,
yep.
Even just checking the cost of them would cost 50 billion euro per year.
Yeah, wow. Well,
so that's amazing.
You know, there's no contact with reality. And
no contact whatsoever. So this sounds fine. Give everyone everything. That's the way you win an election. Give everyone everything. I, you know, we have this election in 2 weeks. It's so fun, because I walk down Stockholm, the streets, and I amuse myself with inverting all the political commercial. So, like you can check that. It's so fun to see what they what I want to give to everyone, and then you say the opposite, and it's totally stupid. It's like they say we want to give everything to everyone, and if you would say the opposite to that, would be of course not. You won't get many voters.
No,
say, I don't give anything to anyone. That's my political party. Don't give anything to anyone.
Well, exactly. And if people were rational, they would say, you know, amen, brother, let's go, you know, because I mean, let's face it. I mean, again, it's like we are, I think this is part of the ideas of, you know, biology and again, the way we've been educated and stuff like this. But I mentioned this to a couple of other guests as well. It's like we have this concept. We're living in these fake environment of fake. We've made them. It's nice. It's natural things and all that, right? But we've been brought up in a certain way, which is so disconnected from nature in any capacity that we've lost the very basic and foundational thing. I mean, look at it, we hardly even produce anything in Sweden anymore. It's a service economy. We're all sitting around with, you know, it's all numbers and statistics, pushing paper back and forth. Oh, just change this over here and you know, we'll get this. You know, it's like pushing variables and everything else. And ultimately, the people who suggest this kind of stuff, they don't have a concept that there is limits to resources or what can be done. It's just sign the paper and it will be done. It's a very dangerous ideology because, as you said as well, people actually vote on that, right? They vote on what sounds good to them or what am I going to get out of the situation? What can I give, you know, get for free? Gimme, right? That attitude.
That's a problem.
So how do you think there in terms of how do we get people back in reality and bringing some nature in this again? I mean, is some of these elections going to change anything? I mean, is there really a glimmer of hope for Sweden in that capacity of where things are going to go now? Or how do you see this, David?
This election?
Is there any hope within the political system of actually enforcing some kind of change or begin to you know, go into a more sane direction here?
It depends on different matters. In some matters, I think we see some differences, different approaches. But the problem is that we also have this, we are the example of the world, which if you have a changing opinion in some, like, security issues in Sweden, I think the security issue is, I hope I had something a little bit to do with that. But when I wrote my first book, 2006, it was extreme. And then I think it got even worse for a while. But now people are a bit more calm when it comes to safety issues compared to then. So when it comes to that, I think a little change and there's a more public opinion that are reflecting a sort of a different view. When it comes to other stuff like the hen discussion, the gender discussion, I think it's going to change, but I think we are 2 or 3 years too early to change. But in a 2 or 3 year old time, when feministic initiative states more and more strange ideas, I think people will change their minds.
Yeah, very good. We're going to wrap up here in a little bit, but it sure is an absurdity that's part of this equation for sure. And I think that hopefully the more people kind of realize how disconnected some of these policies are from nature, they actually get to turn in the opposite direction. But I would want to hit on another point that you brought up before, and it has to do with, you know, with conflict and even armaments and things like that. It's an increasing, you know, globalized world, but there's a lot of, you know, open borders and everything else. We have issues of, for example, you know, ISIS, for example, within Europe and things like that. Now, is this something that you think will shake up the Swede? I mean, we did have that, I forget what year that was, but a bombing in Stockholm and stuff like that. What's going to happen there?
It depends on what happens here, because if we have a terror suicide bomber here, it will absolutely change things, ways of seeing it as a lot of things. So, of course, ISIS may change our Swedish way of and it is very, very clear that ISIS, we have a lot of people supporting ISIS in Sweden, which I think people may understand that, and that may change in many ways. It's a very difficult situation when it comes to the liberal approach of of the global world. Sweden has, in fact, more asylum-seeking people in real figures than Germany, which is the second largest when it comes to taking care of refugees from other countries. So Sweden, we have 10 times more than the one that takes second most.
Wow.
Which, of course, the interesting thing is, I think this is not obvious how you should what you should think, because either you do like a lot of liberal thinkers, they say, okay, we don't want to have the folk home, we don't want to have it the way with we are in favor of a liberal immigration, because we don't want the society to take care of people like they have been doing. And then it's okay to have a liberal approach, probably. But the interesting part is where you have these that say we want to have a huge immigration, but at the same time we should have all we have had before.
Yeah,
and that would be. And the interesting thing is, if you even say, like, we had a for the Christ Democratic Party, we had their youth chairman Sara Skyttedal. She wrote in a Swedish newspaper yesterday or the day before that, she wrote that it might be a problem with this immigration because we don't have enough flats. We don't build
such a mellow such a mellow point. And look at how she was treated, you know.
Yeah. It was of course, because what she wrote was obviously an interesting. It should be able to talk in those terms without. She got sort of. People from her own parties, they felt nausea and got ashamed because she lifted one very rational point that this is maybe a problem. She didn't say, she said, we must look into the question.
And
she got racist. Everybody called her racist. Which, of course, then if you're a serious politician like she is, after that, you will not raise your voice again, because nobody would like to be called racist because they want to address an issue. So this is obviously a major problem. But you can have different views on this. I'm not saying what you should think, but I'm saying that you should be able to talk about your views.
Yep, I
without
agree.
Without being labeled as a racist or Neanderthal or whatever.
I mean, it's absurd. Let's face it. This is an extremely childish level of doing things. But I mean, no. We just. I mean, again, the mistake we're making here is that we think that everyone is the same and hold all the same liberal attitudes as we do. We end up saying yes to everyone. And I mean, let's face it, we can't.
And without checking their passports.
Well, exactly, because no one is, exactly. No one is, we can't make any judgments of whatsoever, any capacity, because then we're a Nazi who wants to, you know, murder people all around the world, right? So no. Just we'll take everyone in and they can live in tents during the winter at the camping sites in Sweden or something like that. I mean, there isn't even capacity to take care of the people that are bringing in almost now to this extent. I think the latest report that were coming out showing this, if there isn't reform in the migration policies or the ministry or whatever you want to call that, about, was it 1 million people over the next 5 years were to come? Or was it even more than that? Was it like 5 million or something? I got to pull that up again, but it was an extraordinary number.
That couldn't be true.
I think it was 1 million. Yeah, okay, expecting 1 million more immigrants to arrive in the next 5 years, I believe the article was. And it's a lot. I mean, in a country that is, well, we're probably around almost 10 million now, but it's like one-tenth of the population increase in 5 years. That's shocking, you know?
But you need to think about how you're going to make that happen. That's what she wrote, and she got really, she got bad out of that.
Yeah. It's an incredible situation, and I'm glad we do have some sane voices like yourself that can actually talk about some of these things and raise the attention to them. And I do hope that there are, of course, people who realize, what kind of situation we're in and how bad things are, and that it's time we need to. It's way overdue, in fact. If not even, I hope it's not too late, but to begin to address some of this stuff to get to the root of the matter, to try to really consider what's going to happen here in the long term. So thank you very much, David Eberhard, for joining us here today. Please let us know if there's anything additional you want to give out. You can give us the book titles again, of course, for those people who want to pick up copies of your books.
Yeah, it's my latest book, How Children Took Power, which is in a... We have an English translation, but not published yet. But in Germany, will be published in 2015 in South Korea. And then also, Nobody Takes Shit in the Land of the Easily Offended, and my first book, In the Land of Security Junkies. Not to forget my psychiatry book for everybody, Normal.
Normal, that's right. Okay, we'll have some links to the books up on the website as well, redeyescreations.com. Check the links there under the on the program page, rather. All right, well, thank you so much, David. Really appreciate it. Have a good one, and hope we maybe we can do it again in the future sometime.
I hope so. Bye.
All right, well, there you go, folks. It's amazing to me to realize that the sound, well-balanced, and frankly, very mellow suggestions and point of view of people like David Eberhard are considered extremes in our sad excuse for a country. A few years ago, he was even accused by many for holding partisan views with right-leaning opinions. Uh-oh. My gods, I knew it, huh? Just another crazy Nazi. Well, you know, cultural Marxism, or if you prefer, cultural Bolshevism and scientific atheism with extreme left-leaning is running Sweden, and it's ruining Sweden. The proof of these destructive and pathological policies is, of course, something that you've seen for a long time. But from now on, you'll begin to see it take full bloom as children become adults and as we go further and further out on that branch of insanity. It's a disease, it's a vampire, it has an insatiable appetite. Sweden is an extremist country. That's what many don't realize. Beware before it spreads to your part of the world. We'll be back with Mike King, Kevin and Benny from Joy Camp, Tom Goodridge, John DeNugent, Frank Salter, Matthew Tate, and many more. Thank you for your membership, and my thanks to the team. Take good care of yourself. Do everything you can to bring balance to your life and those around you with a firm foot in nature, and you can't go wrong. Thank you so much for listening. Take care.